everybody out there in podcast land and on the Front Row feed here, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, a podcast for people who actually like movies, media, anything, and a new little thing for you here today. We are at the Front Row Network trying to branch out a little bit in our content. We've been covering movies and a little bit of television for so long that now we're adding in video games with the addition of the Super GG Radio guys, and we're just really kind of wanting to branch out into even more areas of pop culture and entertainment. And so one of those avenues that we're going to start exploring is the world of professional wrestling, because I myself am an incredibly big professional wrestling fan. And so from every now and again, when WWE does a big pay-per-view event like they did last night, I'm going to try and jump on here with a little review of what happened, in case that interests you. I'm going to try and keep them short because I know a lot of people don't like professional wrestling, but if you do, this is for you. So this is my little review here of WWE's Backlash 2020, which took place last night at the WWE Performance Center in Florida. Of course, there were seven matches on the main card, including a preview match on the kickoff show of the United States Championship between Andrade and Apollo Crews. Not a lot I'm going to say about that one. I didn't actually watch it a ton, but Apollo Crews did, of course, retain his United States Championship with a little bit of help from Kevin Owens. I have a feeling that we will continue to see from that. So the show kicked off Backlash with a triple threat match for the Women's Tag Team Championships. Former champions Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross versus the Iconics and the champions Bayley and Sasha Banks. Of course, Bayley is also the longest reigning SmackDown Women's Champion currently. This match was fine. You know, it started off a little choppy, a little sloppy at the front. I said in my review on NPR Illinois that, you know, triple threat matches can be insanely great. They can be very entertaining, but it takes a lot of trust and a lot of coordination between the wrestlers, and it just didn't quite seem like the coordination and the trust was there at the beginning of this match. It got going near the end there. One of my big highlights of this match, though, is that Alexa Bliss really seemed to get back that kind of mean streak that kind of defined her a couple of years ago. The Little Miss Bliss character came out. She had a series of Thez presses in succession on some people that accompanied some fist shots, and that was just really, really great. This match ended when Alexa hit the Twisted Bliss off the top, but then was rolled up by Sasha Banks to get the victory there. And your women's tag team champions continue to be Bayley and Sasha Banks. You know, one of the things, though, that I took away from this, though, from this match, is that now it appears WWE is going to make the women's tag team championships a roaming title that can go between all three brands of Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, because, in fact, the very first defense after Backlash is going to come on NXT when Sasha and Bayley go up against Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Nox. So that's going to be very interesting, and I think it'll really highlight this amazing women's division that WWE has amongst these three brands. And, you know, I like not confining it to one show and making it a roaming title like that. I think that opens up a lot of good possibilities there. Our second match of the night was Jeff Hardy versus Sheamus. This one, of course, has been building, and it's built upon the real life circumstances and storyline of Jeff Hardy's substance abuse addictions that he's had in the past. This culminated with a segment to kick off SmackDown a few weeks ago where Jeff Hardy was framed for drunk driving by Sheamus, and then Sheamus continued to rub it in, saying he's an embarrassment to his family. He made him take a public urination drug test on the Go Home edition of SmackDown. Just all kinds of shenanigans here, but the match itself was a banger, people. This was great. Jeff Hardy was, you know, kind of flopping about the ring a ton. Like, Sheamus was just kind of throwing him through the ringer for this entire match, though. But, you know, it had a great back and forth there, but ultimately the ending was what kind of was the best part of this, because Jeff Hardy finally gets the upper hand. He hits a Twist of Fate and a Swanton Bomb, but Sheamus just barely gets his leg on the bottom rope to avoid the three count. Hardy goes outside to do one of those rail runs that he does, but as he jumps off the rail, he's met by a bro kick right in the face. It was really brutal looking. Sheamus rolls him into the ring, gives him another bro kick, and there we go. Bing, bang, boom. Sheamus is your winner. opener. I don't think a lot of people were expecting that because, you know, it's Jeff Hardy's comeback and they all think there's probably an upward trajectory. But I don't think that this has to stop any upward trajectory from either of these guys. Both of them looked fantastic in this match. And if this gives Sheamus a number one contendership, the idea, and I know I'm jumping the gun here, but the idea of a Sheamus Braun Strowman Extreme Rules match next month, man, that's just very, very, that just makes me salivate a little bit there because that could be a really great match. But I like this match a lot here, Jeff Hardy and Sheamus. Match number three was for the Raw Women's Championship. The champion Asuka taking on Nia Jax. And man, oh man, oh man, WWE, what are we doing here? Look, it's clear that there might have been a little bit of trepidation with these two performers here because Nia Jax, of course, has famously injured Asuka's best friend Kairi Sane twice over the last month in matches on Raw. Jax, of course, has a history of being a little bit unsafe in the ring. But the big problem with this is that Asuka, even though she's been one of the best performers for years, even though she's clearly been one of the MVPs of the empty arena era here, the fact that she is champion now because of getting that title bestowed upon her by Becky Lynch after her Money in the Bank win means that you really have to try to establish her again as the clear-cut top performer in-ring on Raw. And a win over Nia Jax here, a clean win, would have done that quite a bit in spades, I think. But they go for a screwy finish here. They're both on the outside. They both get double counted out. And, like, nobody looks good when you do this. And it just, I think it just kind of takes away and diminishes from what Asuka is doing here, and it just also doesn't make Nia look good either. So this was a really, really big miss here. They need to really kind of let Asuka be the female version of what Drew McIntyre has been since WrestleMania, in my mind, and I'm hoping that they let her do that. The next match on the card was the handicap match for the Universal Championship, the champion Braun Strowman versus The Miz and John Morrison, and just I will just unequivocally say it any way that I can. John Morrison and The Miz are just the best in every single way. In this empty air arena era, I think it's like you need the personalities to be front and center, and these two have so much personality. The music video that they showed before this show went down was just so nuts and so stupid, but it's just so enjoyable because they're just selling it so much here. The match kind of does the standard, you know, two scared guys versus the monster beats that you would expect. Strowman's just tossed them all around the ring at the start. They start to get the upper hand, quick tags, a lot of quickness that they try and get out there. Now, it looked like that this was might go down a certain path here because in the weeks leading up to this, they said that, if either one of them beat Strowman, they would be co-champions. But then right before the show, they were learned that, no, the person that pinned Strowman would then become the champion. And so because of that, there's this great sequence where The Miz hits a skull-crushing finale along with a top rope kick from John Morrison. And it was a big combo there. Definitely would have been enough for a 1-2-3, but The Miz pulls Morrison off of Braun Strowman there. Obviously, self-preservation there. He wants to be champion, but this sets up Strowman for the running power slam on The Miz and for the 1-2-3. It seems like this could easily run into a division thing here with Miz and Morrison. Some have been saying that that might be what they're setting up for SummerSlam, a match between these two. I'm really, really hoping that they keep them together because they're just so damn fun to watch every Friday on SmackDown. But also the idea of them like pulling pranks on each other like they were pulling on Braun Strowman for the next couple months also sounds like a ton of fun. Then we got into match number five here, the WWE Championship, the champion Drew McIntyre versus Bobby Lashley with MVP in his corner here. Look, Bobby Lashley, it's been over a decade since he's challenged for the WWE Championship. A lot of people have always said that he's kind of like a missed opportunity, that he never quite developed the way they wanted him to. But man, I gotta say, this match leaves that whole persona, that whole idea with Bobby Lashley in the dust for me. He looks fantastic in here. And I don't know if it's with MVP or if it's something that's different with his in-ring work here, but he looks like an absolute monster now. Before this match even started, he put in the full Nelson lock for a full minute on Drew. Drew, like, sold it brilliantly. Lashley had the upper hand for a lot of this match, but there were some great moments from both of them. Drew did this amazing, like, bridged pin Northern Lights suplex that he's done before, but it just looked way better on Lashley there. They both did spine busters on each other. There were superplexes, axe hammers from the top rope. But the thing that was crazy, they even threw in a lot of submissions into this match. Like, Lashley did a crossface and a Kurt Angle ankle lock. When Drew even threw in he reversed a Lashley spear into a Kimura lock, which was just nuts. I loved how this pace was going. It was going so quick. It was building to a great finish, and then we got to do the Gaga finish. Lana comes out, gets on the top apron, arguing with the ref. A Glasgow kiss from McIntyre knocks Lashley into Lana, which knocks her to the floor onto MVP. Lashley turns around for the Claymore kick, and 1-2-3. Drew McIntyre is still your champion here. This just sucks because, like, man, this match was just so good, and I think maybe they're trying to protect Lashley here by saying, you know, he's still this monster and needed Gaga finish to beat him and everything. You couldn't beat him clean, but, man, it just irks me that this is how they chose to finish this match. And in all honesty, though, I'm hoping they kind of resolve this Lana MVP stuff because Lashley's been so much better with MVP, and Lana is just really serving no purpose right now, but this match deserved a much better finish than this. Then we got, I guess, a Raw Tag Team Titles match between the champions, the Street Profits, and the Viking Raiders. Of course, they've been doing these skits on Raw, you know, the Anything You Could Do, I Can Do Better saga, I guess we would call it, where they're doing, like, bowling and knife throwing and basketball and stuff. And I really just don't know what this is, guys. I really don't. I mean, they're fighting each other. They were going to fight each other with swords, but then they didn't. You know, we had Eric. We had Ivar, like, rolling a bowling ball into Montez Ford's nuts. I mean, if that was the most weird thing there, that would be crazy. But, like, then literally Akira Tozawa shows up with ninjas on motorcycles. Thank you. I mean, I just don't know what you do with that. And, you know, like, they all of a sudden then, like, decide, oh, we're going to join up and fight as the Viking Prophets. And you'd think that that would be enough. But then a 7-foot ninja comes in. Ivar somehow gets the power of telekinesis with his turkey leg. And then, I kid you not, it ends with a giant octopus monster in a dumpster. I really just don't know what the hell this cinematic match was. It was not needed. I wish it didn't exist. But, man, if you would have told me that a 10-year-old wrote this, I think Occam's Razor would say that that has to be the correct answer there. But let's get to it. The big match of the night, match number 7, Randy Orton versus Edge, the self-proclaimed greatest wrestling match ever. Look, with a moniker like that, it's going to be really hard to actually live up to it, and it wasn't the greatest wrestling match ever, but I got to tell you, man, this match lived up to the hype that was given to it, which I think in and of itself is a huge, huge win here. Man, these two just really, really brought not even just their A games, their A++ games to this match. A lot of buildup into this, obviously, from Edge's return at the Royal Rumble, Orton's betrayal the next night on Raw, their last man standing match at WrestleMania. And now you got this match, which is straight up wrestling match, but man, it was just back and forth. So many great things. I haven't seen Orton moved this quickly in the ring in years. Edge is proving that he's got all the moves still in his arsenal to be a regular top performer, even at his age, even after a 9-year absence from a horrific neck injury. But there was just so many amazing spots in this. Edge was doing these Ricky Steamboat-esque deep arm drags, like, so fast and furious, back and forth here. The match really kind of turned when Orton did this modified backbreaker into a neck breaker on him, of course, playing off of Edge's neck problems. And that was really his whole focus the rest of the match. But the thing that I loved about this is that it kept building that in-ring psychology so well that these two just kept saying, like, man, I can't put him away with my moves. I have to think of something else. And so they started doing homages to other wrestlers' famous finishing moves. They did the Three Amigos from Eddie Guerrero. We had superplexes from Randy Orton's father, Cowboy Bob Orton. You know, we had the Education made a reappearance here. Edge hit Christian's kill switch. Orton did Triple H's pedigree. Edge did a rock bottom. Like, these guys just kept going back and forth, back and forth. And, of course, at the end here, Randy Orton just hit the RKO out of nowhere like he always does. That wasn't enough to put him away, though. And then Edge kind of reversed it into two consecutive spears on Orton. And even though that wasn't enough, he went for this, like, springboard off the middle buckle, turnbuckle. But Orton hits the RKO while Edge is flying in the air. Just a wonderful looking spot there. But even that wasn't enough to put it away. And Edge had the anti-venom lock on, the one he beat him at WrestleMania with. But Orton then knees him in the nether regions, which the ref misses. And that sets up literally Orton's old finishing maneuver, the punt kick. And man, he just gets all of this. It connects so loudly. And that is going to be the 1-2-3. Edge is sitting there selling this so great the entire match, but especially at the end here, and Orton whispers in his ear to go home, tell the girls and Beth that Uncle Randy says hi. Edge refuses medical attention after the match, and Orton kind of has this look of perplexedness on his face, but then there's all this just like devious, you know, like, ha ha ha, I got this thing. So this was just a great match. You know, WWE's getting some flack online because they pumped artificial crowd noise into this to make it seem louder, make it seem more like a bigger crowd was there, even though they still had the 50 NXT trainees there. Look, man, I think it enhanced the match, you know, and that's like the crowd atmosphere is something we're all missing right now. I liked it, you know, like I like that we had it there, and it's a performance, people. Like, I don't care if it's not ethical or whatever like that. Anything that kind of gives us that extra oomph that we've been missing since we haven't been able to have crowds there, I think is a good thing. I don't really know where this goes. Edge apparently suffered a pretty good trapezius injury in this match, which makes it even more impressive in my mind. But if Orton now goes on to be the challenger to Drew McIntyre at Extreme Rules, or even setting up a pretty big matchup there for SummerSlam, who knows, but I think that they're both going in some good directions there, of course, maintaining that Edge is healthy. All right, so that's it. That is my short, quick review here of Backlash 2020. I hope you like this. Again, we'll be trying to do these for all the major WWE pay-per-views, NXT pay-per-views as well. Just let us know how you think, what you think about these things. Message us on Facebook or Twitter. On Facebook, the Front Row Move, or the Front Row Network. On Instagram, the Front Row Network. And on Twitter, at Front Row Reviews with a Z. And of course, you can always find us on nprillinois.org. I'm Jeremy Gechner. Thank you for listening to this brief WWE review. And as always, we will see you in the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.